webcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, November 4th, 2009. The only first Wednesday of November 2009 in the history of mankind. Welcome in on this midweek edition of the Gospel Revolution webcast, helping you over the hump of the week. Glad to have you along for the ride. We are geared up. We are locked and loaded, ladies and gentlemen, as we get ready for the Gospel Revolution Convention. 1 week from tomorrow, we will be convening in beautiful Houston, Texas, for said Revolution Convention. And, of course, hosting and prepping and getting very excited himself is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, the one, the only, you know him, you love him, we could not live without him, the most holy high reverend, Michael Williams, from his home offices in Houston, Texas tonight. Michael.
Good evening.
Good evening, Brother Hitchcock.
How are you tonight, Glenn?
I am doing wonderfully. I am glad to be online with you and the assembled masses. Glad to have Sean O'Halloran in our Tampa Bay studio ready to take your call at 1-800-436-3260. That is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. 1-800-436-3260. So everything getting in preparedness for the big convention coming up?
Yeah, I just took care of some final plans at the Marriott to get everybody situated and comfortable and their meals all selected and, you know, some last minute, we want this, don't want that things. So I think I've got all the bases covered. If not, the staff there at the Marriott has always been so great. They will accommodate us, even if I have forgotten something. I don't think I have, but we'll wait and see.
The you forget something? That's not possible.
No, not impossible. But, you know, there's always a first time for everything.
Well, that's true.
But we are looking forward to our guests arriving, and people have their tickets bought to fly in, and it's not too late to do that. You know, there's still good flights, prices out there for, 2 week advance. There seems to be some good flights now for some reason.
Yeah, and especially if you go through things like Travelocity or Orbitz or Priceline,
you can always get something. You know, it's not like it was, you know, several years ago. But anyway, and I have been, it's really interesting today. I have taught a lot out of the book of Hebrews, and a great deal of the understanding of the gospel is found in Hebrews, and Hebrews is just saturated with the gospel, contrary to popular evangelical Christian opinion of it in their out-of-context style of teaching this book and all of the books of the Bible. It is actually very positive, my personal subtitle for this is Debunking Hebrews, because some of the most tragic doctrines that the church teaches comes out of Hebrews. But today, it was really interesting because, you know, when somebody tells you they've read that, frontward and backward.
Right.
I literally did that today. I started at chapter 13 and read through it, and then went back to chapter 12. It was very interesting to read the conclusion first and then go back and see what the concept was that led to the conclusion. And I can tell you, I can give you one really clear message. Hebrews, read frontward or backward, is still good news.
Well, it's our contention, of course, that the book of Hebrews was written by Paul the Apostle. It isn't attributed, Michael, to Paul. but why don't you explain to the beautiful humans why you think it is consistent and clear a writing of Paul's, even though it's not attributed to Paul, and why that's important?
Well, the teaching style, the comparative style that Paul taught, his teaching people from their point of view. There is no other teacher in the New Testament that teaches the way that Paul does. No one teaches from someone else's point of view other than Paul. The others really do line up as fairly simplistic, right or wrong, compared to Paul's style of teaching. It is, most people just simply know their debate points. One of the things that I just detest about politics is that no one answers a question and no one truly debates. But with Paul's style of teaching, he knew his opponents' view of subjects better than they knew it themselves.
Right.
I think the reason that I identify with that is that I knew by now, if you will let me use the term, my opponents as far as debating the issues of the gospel. I know my opponents' views, the Word of Faith movement, the Charismatic movement, and Evangelical Christianity. I know their views, and in many cases I know it better than they know it, because I can be more consistent with their doctrine than they can be. They can't really say what they're saying, but see, I can say it and say it with clarity instead of watering it down and then let it lead to its own tragic conclusion. And that's exactly what Paul did.
You're kind of like Paul in the sense that you used to teach the legalistic Old Covenant perspective.
Yeah, in our generation.
Paul was, as he called himself, a Pharisee of the Pharisees.
Yes, and in our generation, I definitely learned the populist doctrine of the day through the 70s and the 80s, for sure, and then the drastic changes began in 1983 as far as publicly teaching the message of the gospel. I had studied it for more than 5 years before that, just strictly on the gospel of peace. And from there, it was, I look back over it myself, and it's really quite an amazing journey. I'm very grateful to have come the route that I did. I'm glad to have learned the wrong way first, because I have no questions about the gospel now. I'm glad to have learned the negative view. I'm glad to have learned the inconsistent and the contradictory view. Because it sure makes teaching the gospel, Glenn, so simple, so easy, so delightful, fun. It is it is without contradiction. And the thing that always amazes me is that I don't have to teach, if you will, the doctrine of the gospel of grace and the gospel of peace. And I never have to say if and but or maybe. The answer is always consistent. It is always absolutely conclusive, absolutely every time. It is not vague. It is not sanctimonious. It is not high-minded. It's a very simple, direct, straightforward, consistent view that exalts everything that Jesus taught, exalts and verifies everything that Jesus taught. It exalts and verifies all of the prophets and all of their prophecies as being true and fulfilled. It exalts God's law to the highest degree. There is no Christian doctrine that exalts God's law the way that my ministry on the teaching of the gospel exalts God's law. None of them. None of them come anywhere near the absolute conclusion and the absolute belief in the absolute power and the resilience and the consistency of the law. They all are vague about it. Every one of them, no matter who they are, they're all vague about it. They're all inconsistent. It continually runs through everything that they say from Sunday to Sunday, from line to line. I've listened
to
them on TV.
Yeah, well, it's not just inconsistent. It's just hypocritical.
It is hypocritical.
And we're going to have a demonstration of that in a few moments, ladies and gentlemen. We want you to stay online because I came across a great example of legalism and bondage and a point of view that is being taught in the church right now in evangelical, Word of Faith, Christian circles. This guy happens to be a formerly important person in my life, a very good friend of mine, that I recently came across a ministry that he has got going now, and we're going to be talking about that in a few moments. It's very interesting. The issue that we're going to be talking about is pertinent, but it's even a broader discussion than the particular issue that he's teaching on. But we have a clip that we've captured off the internet, and it's brief, but we want you to stay online and enjoy that and hear the conversation that ensues. This is Glenn Klein Online. We're talking, as always, on Wednesday night about the gospel with Michael Williams, Gospel Revolution. As always, we're asking for your participation tonight at 1-800-436-3260. That is the toll-free number, 1-800-436-3260. Any comments, questions, issues, whether it be pertaining to what we're talking about, to the convention, it doesn't make a difference. We just want to hear from you. We've pointed out so many times how important having your voice be heard is, and that's why we have the three lines, so that we've got a line available for you at all times. So give us a call at 1-800-436-3260. So if you're listening on the archive, as always, we're happy to take your emails at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That's webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Well, Michael, we have a bunch of emails that I want to get to, at least some of them. But as we finished the webcast pledge drive now 2 weeks ago, after our last update appeal, we had a number of gifts that came through, which we're very thankful for, and we want to give recognition tonight to, I want to make sure we do this right, Roy Musi. Is that how Roy pronounces his last
name,
Michael?
Yeah.
Musi. Roy contributed $90 from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, which we really appreciate from Roy. Mike Kolb signed up for a monthly $25 subscription on PayPal. Thank you very much, Mike. And, Mike, I, if you're listening to the webcast, I tried to respond to your donation pledge on your email. For some reason, it kicked it back. So if you could forward us your shipping address at Gospel Revolution or at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, we will quickly get out to you your thank you CDs. And so we want to thank both those gentlemen for their gifts during the course of the week. We also got a gift from, I want to make sure that I get the right amount here. Where is it? Rita and Carrie Whiteman, or Waitman, with a $50 a month gift, which was very, very appreciated. So thank you guys very much for participating, Carrie and Rita Waitman in Montana, Whitehall, Montana. So we did pick up some more. And one other thing, Mike, I want to, before we move on from this, I just want to point out something to you beautiful humans. You've heard us talk before about David Johnson, who has given of his hard-earned money consistently. And Just as a point of observation, the last webcast, Michael, I believe was on the 21st of October, correct?
Yes, I think that's right.
Okay. So, David, starting, this is just what David Johnson has sent in since the pledge drive ended on the 21st. On the 22nd, he sent $1.20. On the on November 2nd, just a few days ago, he sent $4. Yesterday, he sent $6.80. Now, that so you got $6.80, you got $4, that's $10.80, you got $1.20, that's $12, right? And
yep.
Then today we received a payment from David for $47.20. So, first of all, if everybody who's been touched by this webcast and by this effort would make a contribution over a course of 2 or 3 weeks of $10 or $12, Michael, we would be sitting in a much better financial situation. Obviously.
Yeah.
But then, every so often, David will kick in a $47.20 gift or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The man, over the course of the last year, with these small amounts, sometimes a little larger than others, has given hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars to this effort, and which seemingly has been relatively painless for him.
Yeah, you know, it's what he can do, and that's
and what he wants to do.
That, and loves to do and can do, and that's what Paul's teaching was on giving, that no one be burdened, you know, that each give according to that which he hath, not what he hath not, if you will. And so I don't know. I mean, we have our regular contributors, which these guys are just fantastic, and they cover the bills. You know, they literally cover the bills, and but for some reason we're not getting the David Johnson point across. Because
we're trying.
We are trying. We are definitely trying, and obviously, and we still don't know whether David even hears us on the webcast or not. We never hear from him.
Other than on PayPal when he gives his money.
Well, that's the only time we hear from him at all. And we have no clue if he knows whether or not we've been talking about him or not. We have not a clue. And but the people that are hearing definitely have a clue. But if the PayPal thing is such a wonderful tool, and if everybody listening tonight just, you know, and we're not in a pledge drive, but, you know, habits are hard to start.
Yeah, they're hard to break, too.
They are hard to start. But I tell you, David has proven that if you just got in the habit, whenever you sit down in your computer, just stop and think, do I have $5 I can throw at the gospel? Yeah, let me jump on PayPal. And it just takes seconds. You know, hey, well, today do I have $50 I can throw at the gospel? Or $1? It's the habit of it that would be absolutely incredible for us, especially for this ministry, because we don't have a vast supply of contributors. Our contributors are very, very limited to a handful, and it really shouldn't be. We should have everybody who has ever been touched by this gospel doing something. Now, and not just for the benefit of reaching other people, but I just think it would be so good for the individuals just to know that they are, not just us that we're reaching out, but that they are helping us reach out, and that they are reaching other people by these contributions. So the David Johnson effect has not kicked in. And I don't know what it is. I think everybody thinks, well, somebody else is doing this. But you got to understand, nobody else is doing this. If they do, we wouldn't be talking about David Johnson every week.
Well, I mean, nobody else is doing what David Johnson's doing. That's
yes.
That is true. We do have people that are being generous and very generous with their money.
Incredibly
but
so.
But not in the numbers that we need, number one. And number two, we have nobody other than David Johnson doing what he is doing. As this is very typical of what I just reiterated to you beautiful
humans
tonight.
He's
given, in the last 2 weeks, he's given four or five times.
Yes.
And as we talked about during the pledge drive, it is so encouraging for us to just hear from people. Because even Michael, with $1.25 gift, what somebody is taking time to go on the website, to click donation, to go through the PayPal process, and they're saying, I'm thinking about you guys, I care about this message, and I want more people to hear about it.
Yeah, you couldn't send us a greeting card cheaper. You couldn't send a thank you note cheaper than what Dave is doing. And I think it would do well that people understand that every time that a contribution is made through PayPal, I personally get a notification of that. And it's in my email every day. And I click on every one of them, just like I do all my other emails, and, see, well, even though I see it's from David Johnson, I know probably approximately what range that it's going to be, but it always just delights me to open it up, and it really is an encouragement. It's just like a nice little hug, you know, for the day. Even if it's $1.20 hug, it's great.
David Johnson from beautiful Rockford, Illinois.
Yeah.
Well, Scott Johnson is going to be one of the speakers at the Gospel Revolution Convention in 1 week from tomorrow. It starts.
Yes, he is.
Scott Johnson from Alaska.
Yep.
Going to Alaska.
Yeah, Scott and Megan are coming down, and two wonderful people. And Scott teaches philosophy and art in school there in Anchorage. So the young man that I taught many, many years ago is now a philosophy teacher in Anchorage and teaches art there. And he's coming back home. He's coming back home to the Gospel Revolution. He's going to be sharing with us while
awesome.
He's there.
We also have Mark Eaton, who's going to be sharing, and Chris Harrington, both those guys from Texas. We've got Ken Vandeveer coming from Oklahoma, who will be sharing. And yours truly will be doing a little teaching. And our primary focus will be Michael's extensive teaching on the book of Hebrews. Hebrews revealed and debunked. So we're looking forward to that very much. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's about 24 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock on the East Coast. If you're listening right now and it's about 25 minutes after the hour on Wednesday night, you're listening live. We want to hear from you. Excuse me, at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran is waiting to take your calls. And we did want to get into this clip that we have that we wanted to talk about that we mentioned in the email post that went out talking about the webcast tonight. We used to do a feature, we did this for a couple of months, called the Legalist of the Week. And we have some fun with it where we pulled some teaching or some preaching off a typical evangelical television program or radio show. And for a number of reasons, we stopped doing it. But I came across this clip recently, and this is actually a guy that I was very friendly with back in the churchianity days when I was living full-time in Wisconsin. And this guy's name is Mark Gunger. And Mark As I said, we were pretty friendly. We spent a lot of time together. We worked together. And Mark was the worship leader of our church. And then he went on to leave our church, and then he went to a church in Green Bay where he was worship leader. And long story short, Mark now has taken that church over as senior pastor and has founded two other churches and has got an international radio and television and teaching ministry, if you will. Although, by Michael's definition of ministry, bringing relief, far from it. Mark is a very clever guy, a very talented guy, a nice guy, but this is not the guy that I knew. When I knew him, seemed like he was coming away, as was I, from Christianity as we knew it. And somehow, Michael, he got in there and figured it out, what he could do to become highly successful, and apparently he has financially. Mark does seminars worldwide, and like I said, on the radio and television, about relationships and about marriage. And he's a very funny guy. He's a very clever guy. And he has a ministry entitled Laughing Your Way to a Better Marriage. And so he talks to men and women, young men, young women, about marriage and about relationships, about sex, and about all the things that he sees as important vis-a-vis the male and female dynamic. Well, I came across this clip that Mark was teaching on masturbation. And in just a couple of minutes, beautiful humans, you are going to hear so much legalism and so much dreck regarding the issue of masturbation. It could be any issue, but this is a major issue, especially for guys. And I wanted to address the issue specifically and also generally from the standpoint of how you approach something like this when a minister of God, so-called, comes down with a strong statement on any life issue, as Mark Ungert here does on masturbation.
Said, if a man looks at another woman and fantasizes sexually about her, he commits adultery in his heart. Well, good grief. If just looking at a woman and thinking dirty thoughts is a sin, why in the world is yanking on yourself for crying out loud? How do you get to where that's not a sin? But why are people saying this? Why are Christians saying, oh, yeah, you can do this. Yeah, just yank on yourself for a while. It's fine. Fantasize, look at porn. Yeah, no problem there. No problem. It's like we've lost our minds. Pastors, Christian leaders, some parents. Dear Lord, I have moms come up to me in my seminar saying, well, don't I have to encourage my boys to masturbate? First of all, I can't imagine my mom saying that to me.
Man, that'll traumatize her for life, wouldn't it? Your mom saying, you need to masturbate. Oh, good Lord, Mom!
But why is she saying this? Because she's bought into the stupid ideas that our culture said, well, they got to do something because we don't want to marry too early. Oh, no. And we get into this stupid culture that is creating a disaster in guys like you, encouraging you to do behavior that is ultimately very negative. And here's the crazy thing about it. You know what really fries me is when they teach you guys, your teacher, some of you talk about this. You know, you certainly see it on MTV and everything. Oh, you know, masturbate, it's great. Oh, it's real fabulous, you know. You can achieve an orgasm by masturbating. Listen to me. You can't. You cannot. It's impossible. Something can happen. A guy can ejaculate. Something can happen for a girl. But it's not an orgasm. An orgasm is when you reach your sexual peak and endorphins are flooded into your body and every cell in your body stands up, grabs the handle of the cell next to it and goes, hallelujah.
All righty then. That is Mark Unger on the subject of masturbation.
I thought it was Daffy Duck, actually.
Well, Mark looks a little like Daffy Duck.
Well, I wasn't talking about the look. I was talking about the shtick.
Well, he's got a good shtick going. You guys can hear that he's very energetic and very clever. But Michael, where do we start with this? First of all, he comes into it saying,
God.
If thinking about sin in your heart, or lust in your heart, is a sin, then how much more is yanking your thing? And by the way, beautiful humans, this was done at a men's meeting where there were a lot of young men sitting in the congregation. So what about that? If Jesus said that if you lust in your heart, you've committed adultery, how much more, he says, is wanking your thing?
Well, of course, Jesus said even if you get angry, you've committed murder. So, you know, let's just chalk it up for everybody. The lack of understanding about the teaching of Jesus, number one, I mean, we could have lists, you know, from here to eternity about the misconceptions Christianity has about the teachings, the work, the life, the death, the burial, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But here in particular is the inconsistency again, because while he's making this ridiculous assumption that he's making, that even thinking about it is sin, he certainly doesn't take into consideration the other 630 laws and rules and regulations, and plus this was an extra one.
Right, because the Bible never deals specifically with masturbation.
No, and the Bible never deals specifically with even thinking about it being a sin. The law only deals with your actions. And Jesus added a law. In fact, Jesus added lots of laws.
He clarified the true meaning of them anyway.
Absolutely, most certainly did. And it would certainly have been new to anyone who was listening, because they certainly didn't define it that way. But Jesus' teaching was a clarification and definition of the law in its purity, which I respect and revel in the clarity of that revelation of God's law. But, if we go from that point to the issue that even a thought is sin, and then for him to make the ridiculous statements that if it's a sin just to think about it, then where does is his vulgar terminology, as far as I'm concerned, in public, I'm thinking about all of the especially the young teenagers sitting there. Just on that point, you know, that the condemnation and the guilt, of course, at least they get to laugh about it a little bit, but in the long term, you know, his comments are very deadly. His comments are very deadly. Had he been around when I had to sit at the bedside of a young man who had his hands spread over his mouth trying not to make a bad confession, and who finally emasculated himself and almost bled to death and was rescued and then eventually hanged himself in a cell in a mental institution because of the crap like what this funny man is saying, he wouldn't be laughing so hard. He wouldn't be getting his jollies off of trying to make money from trickery. That's all this is, Glenn. I don't have anything good to say about it.
The one thing for sure is that he is leading anybody that is hearing his teaching on abstaining even from masturbation. He is leading a army of men and women to commit lots of masturbation, for sure. Because anytime you set up a law, you are guaranteeing that people are going to be driven even more towards it. That's what Paul said when he said that the law adds power to the temptation. Obviously, people are tempted with that anyway, and because it's a natural function. But you add a law to it, I guarantee you that Mark Gunger has had personal issues himself with masturbation. Ladies and gentlemen, when you hear a preacher preaching hard against something, you can almost guarantee that they are struggling with it in their own heart, in their own mind, in their own lives, for sure.
Well, an issue, too, is not just the that, you know, preach against masturbation is going to make people masturbate more. The issue
and feel guilty
is,
about it. That's the problem.
Well, and
they,
the issue, too,
to do
is
it, and
they,
then to feel guilty between them and God about it.
And also, not only do they feel guilty, but that guilt and the attempted suppression at from masturbation is going to lead to, and it has led, it's not just going to, it has led to young people ruining their lives and having premarital sex way too early because they're suppressing the their sexual desires as far as masturbation is concerned, and it's literally driving them into the back seats of cars. They don't have anything else to do.
And at this Love Can Wait effort in the church where they have young men and women come forward and pledge before their family, friends, and before the church and God that they will wait to have sex before they're married has caused a epidemic in Christian circles of sexually transmitted disease of the anus and of oral STDs. Because in their minds, as long as you don't penetrate that vagina, you're not having intercourse. That's craziness, ladies and gentlemen. That's the kind of lunacy that this kind of teaching leads to. And for this guy, Michael, to stand up and say that you cannot achieve orgasm as a man or a woman by masturbating is absolutely bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I mean, can you imagine, so you've got a young man or a young woman listening saying they have never had an orgasm because, and they don't know what an orgasm is because they've only masturbated. What are you going to do? You're going to drive people to get involved in sex prematurely in their lives because now they've got something that is in front of them saying, well, I've never experienced an orgasm. So if this is this good, then my goodness, I've just got to go out and have an orgasm, true orgasm, by having sex.
And what
it's so fraught with so many complications and contradictions. It's just insulting. It's just insulting to the human.
It's such a good example of legalistic teaching and preaching, and couched in such a humorous way.
Yeah,
and like Michael said, this kind of stuff is deadly. Literally, life and death stuff that is produced. This guy teaches that young men and women should get married young. And he teaches an element of the old shepherding movement that you have to run your potential spouse before your pastor for his approval. He teaches that you should take your pastor and his wife out for dinner with your potential spouse, and he even jokes about how he's happy to go and get a free dinner any time to double date with a potential couple in order to get the thumbs up or thumbs down on anybody that you're considering marrying. So I know this situation up close and personal, and it is not a pretty picture. This is Glenn Klein Online. We're going to be doing more of this, and if you have questions or comments, you can email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, or you can give us a call if you're listening live, and it's about 20 minutes until the hour on Wednesday night. We'd love to hear from you, 1-800-436-3260. But before we hear from you, we want to hear from Garma Colston, who is calling us from beautiful Virginia. Garma!
Good evening, Glenn and Mike. How y'all doing?
We're doing wonderfully. How are you guys doing in the beautiful Commonwealth of Virginia?
Doing all right here. It's kind of a chilly evening.
Did you hear that segment?
Yeah, I did. It's very interesting stuff.
Thank you. Of course,
I missed the first part of it, but I'll go back and replay it later.
That's the nice thing about the archives. You can always go back and listen again.
Yeah.
Something tells me people will be reviewing that one a few times.
Yeah.
It's wacky.
I wanted to ask you guys, has it ever been your experience, like, when you share the gospel of grace and peace, you know, for the whole world, and you're sharing it with other grace believers who are still kind of partialist in their thinking. And what I mean by partialist is they still believe it's only for the believers. And then your experience that they kind of like, I don't know, kind of get elusive with you or kind of disassociate themselves from you after a while?
All legalists do that, Garma. It doesn't make any difference whether it's partialist, fundamentalist. They all the ist do these things. They the ist are self-righteous people. That's all there is to it. And self-righteousness does not like to be confronted. Self-righteousness, if someone has the self-righteousness and they're seeking the truth, they're going to want to hear from you. They're going to listen. And some of them get offended right up front, but then they go home and think about it. So, you know, the thing that I always have held to is that you never, ever take their response as the final answer. Just keep sharing, you know. But the response that you're getting is self-righteousness. It's arrogant self-righteousness. And they know they don't have any answers for you, so they just start cutting you off. They don't want to hear from you. They even though your approach is simply sharing with them, you know, now if you're trying to browbeat them, which I just can't imagine anybody trying to browbeat people with the gospel. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about it, is that we share it because we get to, and because we really care about people. And you know, when they're open, they're open. When they're not, they're not. But the reaction that you're getting from what you call the partialist is the very same reaction you get from out and out legalists. It's just, it's still legalism.
Yeah. And of course, like, and sometimes I wonder, maybe, like, you know, those that are preaching grace just for the believer, they still get enough of a hard time from the legalists who haven't even come to understand that, you know, the grace is even for the believer. And so maybe they're thinking, well, I'm getting enough of opposition as it is, and I don't want to get even more opposition for even thinking about it being for the whole world.
Well, Michael, you experienced that firsthand. I mean, because when you first started sharing the gospel of grace and peace, you were sharing it for the believer.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you just took it to its logical conclusion eventually.
Well, it's been that way all along, from the gospel of peace to the gospel of grace to all the way down the line. And each time it's like, you know, here we go again. You know, here goes another swath of Christians who are going to, you know, no longer be able to associate with me. And even though at no point across the line did across the way did I ever draw the line and say, if you don't agree with me, we can't associate. I was perfectly willing to continue associations and friendships with people without even bringing up the subject. But once they know that you do not agree with them, even if you are approaching it and only sharing when they are open or when they want to talk about it, sorry, you are cut off, and that's just the way of legalism.
Well, Garma, do you have any other questions or comments? Because we've got some more emails and callers that want to get in.
Yeah, I'll just make one more comment, and I think that you know, anybody who's, you know, has come to the you know, the conclusion of grace, and they know that, and they really believe, you know, in the finished work, I think it's only a matter of time before that they genuinely will come to the conclusion that, yeah, it was for the whole world. It has taken effect for everybody.
Well, we're hoping that for the whole planet.
Yep.
Garma, we really are. I mean, that's why I keep doing what I do, is that I am persuaded that this gospel fits the heart of every human being. I am persuaded that they are hardwired for the download, if you will, and they are perfectly capable, and they are perfectly built to receive, understand the gospel in its entirety. I believe every human heart has already gotten the revelation of the gospel. I think we have come into this world with the revelation of the gospel, and I think it's taught out of us. So reconnecting is what I believe we're helping people do, is to reconnect with home.
Okay.
Hey, Grandma, stay in touch and stay tuned. We've got an interesting letter coming up here and some other correspondence. So stay in touch with us, but you'll enjoy listening on the archive or if you log on live for the rest of the evening. But thanks, as always, for your participation.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate what y'all are doing.
Thanks, Grandma.
All right, take care.
Here's Grandma Colson, ladies and gentlemen, from Stafford, Virginia. Now that line is open to you at 1-800-436-3260. Still got about 15 minutes and more if we need to get in at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran waiting to take your call. All right, Michael, are you ready for a Gospel Revolution webcast first?
Let's go.
We got an email from a United States naval vessel.
Awesome.
The USS Tortuga. And this is from, I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that ship correctly, T-O-R-T-U-G-A. This is from Eric Martin of the United States Navy. He says, my issue is that I've been married for 13 years, and my wife and I are going through a divorce now. It's a long, drawn-out one, and I'm being told that I've displeased God because I already have another lady to whom I wish to get married after my divorce is over with. So my question is, what does the Bible say about my situation? Am I damned or not?
Wow.
Signed very respectfully, Eric J. Martin, United States Navy.
Yeah,
well, first,
you know,
Eric,
thank
you very much for serving our country.
Yes.
And you talk about providing for freedom. We really appreciate your sacrifice. And we know that you're going through a challenging and difficult time. Change is always tough. But, Michael, Eric gets right to the point. He's being condemned by some people that they have told him that he's displeasing God. And he just flat out asks, what does the Bible say about his situation? And is he damned or not?
Well, let me go to the end of the question. You are not damned. If you were divorced and remarried 50 times, it is not going to change the power. How dare these people insult the blood of Jesus Christ and tell this young man that a divorce is going to alienate him from God. There is nothing that has the power to alienate or separate you from God, neither life nor death nor principalities and powers. I'd love to be able to stop and talk about principalities, because what you're hearing from is the true New Testament biblical definition of principalities. These principalities are trying to convince you of a lie. They're trying to convince you that the blood of Jesus is weak and anemic and ineffective and incomplete, that the work of the cross is incomplete. Don't listen to it. Let me assure you that no matter what teaching in the Bible that you find, especially in the New Testament, that puts guidelines on anything, please remember that there was something that happened after those tenets, after those rules, after Jesus said, even if you think about it, you're doomed. There's something happened after that. It's called the cross. After even Jesus said, by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. Even after Jesus said, you will be judged by every word that comes out of your mouth. Even after Jesus said those things, an event took place. It's called the fulfillment of all Scripture at the cross of Jesus Christ, which obliterated every law, every rule, every regulation, obliterated all sin, and united you with God through the blood of Jesus Christ, inseparably. Nobody, nothing, not the principalities that are speaking to you, nothing can alienate or separate you from the power, the love of God, or the work of the cross.
Amen. Even the teachings of Jesus himself, as he delineated the exact meaning of the law in his earthly ministry, he obliterated his own teaching, Michael.
He absolutely did, and that's what he intended to do. Nobody else would teach it accurately enough to be obliterated. You see, to know that something is completely destroyed, you got to know what it is first. So Jesus, I'm sure, looked around, and that's the reason he was so upset with the Pharisees. He was upset with the Pharisees because they watered down the law. And so Jesus had to follow up behind the Pharisees and say, no, you teach it this way. You say that you teach from the law that if you commit adultery, you're in danger. I'm telling you if you even think about it. So Jesus had to bring the law to it its clearest definition so we would understand clearly what we were delivered from at the cross. I never will forget making the statement many years ago. It's been a decade and a half ago, at least, if not more, that I stood up in a church and I made the statement that if you wanted to lose all hope of salvation, if you wanted to have no hope at all, read the teachings of Jesus. Because Jesus very artfully stripped the human race of all ability to achieve righteousness through the law. Any preconceived notion that was there, all you got to do, if you don't understand Deuteronomy, if you don't understand Leviticus, go let Jesus explain it to you. He did it better. Nobody ever taught it. Moses wrote it down as was given to him. But the only person who ever taught the law accurately, completely, thoroughly, as it is, was Jesus Christ. And the only person to sacrifice their life to take it away was the same teacher, Jesus Christ.
Right. Well, we've got a number of emails that I want to get to, but as far as Eric is concerned, and we really appreciate you communicating with us, Eric, and please stay in touch. Even if Eric had sexual relations with this woman that he's considering marrying after he gets divorced, would that cause any kind of schism in his relationship with God?
Not his relationship with God. You know, everyone has to step carefully when you are dealing with relationships with other people. When and how and what are all up for the particular situation that you're in. It may be very unwise to go ahead and enter into a sexual relationship with someone. It may be very wise to wait. I don't know. I don't know the situation. But the one thing I do know, is that no kind of a sexual encounter will ever be able to interfere with your relationship with God. Scott Johnson, who's coming down, and Scott is in his 30s now. He was like 17 years old when I met him. He was called a teenage faith healer. Scott was radical to the core. And his parents gave him a tape of mine where I was teaching on the gospel of grace. And he said, Mike, he told me while I was up in Alaska with him, and just in August, he said, Mike, he said, let me tell you what totally changed my mind, and the dominoes fell so fast and so radically after that. He said, you said on a tape, the first tape I ever listened to you in, he said, on that first tape, you said, sin cannot separate you from God. And he said everything in him exploded. And the radical change, he said the weight of sin came off of him. He said the confusion, the guilt, all of that came off of him instantaneously. He accepted that salvation from the Lord. He accepted that salvation of that, the salvation of that truth. When he realized sin had no power to separate him from God, it from there on, it was the fast track to freedom. And Scott, and you'll hear from Scott at the convention, those of you that are able to be there, you'll hear him not only tell that story, but share his own perspectives of the gospel. You know, when you can reach in to someone's life past all of the superficiality, past the teenage faith healer label, and reach someone's heart who has shut themselves off into a dark world of guilt and judgment, but yet on the surface is a hallelujah bandwagon. When you can reach past that and cut through that that horrible deception, and with one sentence, one line, sin cannot separate you from God. Six words to my best count. Six words dismantled the entire evangelical doctrine in his life. So it's, you know, these are the things that we're trying to get across. So please know that there is nothing that can alienate you or separate you from God. It doesn't make any difference whether you have
sex now,
sex later.
No matter what any preacher or teacher or Christian says to you, Eric, and all you other beautiful humans out there.
Absolutely.
This is Glenn Klein Online. That's Michael Williams, Gospel Revolution Night on Ye Old Webcast. We've got some more email questions. Do you want to go a few minutes over?
Sure.
Okay. This one comes from our good buddy John
anyway.
Clark in Victorville, California. He says, hey, Glenn and Mike, Philippians 1:6 says, until the day of Jesus Christ. That word until means till, while, maybe, even, during. Could really cause confusion as to Paul's view as to when the day of Jesus Christ was. Could you please explain, John Clark?
Number one, I'd have to go back and look at it in context, and there would be a couple of ways. A lot of times Paul spoke of the day of Jesus Christ as though it had not happened, even though he taught us very clearly that it had happened. And there are cases where Paul was speaking of a future event called a revelation or an understanding of, that we're waiting for this revelation, that people are waiting to understand to the saving of the soul and the renewing of the mind. It is a process. There is a wait. There is that we are waiting to see that happen in people's lives. I have not read that particular one in context in quite some time, but I will guarantee you that not only there, but in many places, because of not looking at it in context, Paul's teaching, just like the book of Hebrews, is concerned. These statements are very common for Paul to make, and by using someone else's perspective until he gets the gets the point across. So I wish I could answer definitively because I was reading it in context, but I can't. But the one thing that I can tell you is that that there is no way that Paul was confused about the day of the Lord.
We've got two almost identical questions. One's from Michael Kolb that we referenced earlier, who had participated last week in the pledge drive, and also from our friend Tressa Martin from Spokane, Washington. Tressa said, it has been a while since I've heard anything about the church Michael was going to in Houston, anything happening there. And Michael said, I have a quick question, and if it's none of my business, please let me know. I was wondering if Michael is still attending the church in Houston. I used to have folks in the church on the webcast in the past, and I haven't heard anything from them in a long time. So both those came in this week, and it would be a good opportunity for us to address whatever happened to the, what was that place called?
Freedom Worship Center?
Freedom Worship. Whatever happened to Freedom Worship Center?
Well, it no longer exists. And, you know, I have to say that I'm batting 1,000 on...
That's an appropriate analogy tonight, as game number 6 of the World Series is being played as we speak in beautiful New York, New York City, with the New York Yankees up on the Philadelphia Phillies, 7-1 in the 5th inning. You can't bat better than 1,000. That's not possible.
Well, I thought so. I wasn't sure, but I thought I'd go for the analogy. But, yeah, so far I'm batting 1,000 on the exposure of a church to the gospel. And it doesn't hold together in the light of absolute freedom. And that's really all that I have to say, you know, is that it no longer exists. You know, the people who were members that were able to step away from the tragedy and process, their lives are great. They go to church nowhere. And I honestly don't know about the rest. I know that the pastor who was here no longer even resides in Texas. And I, you know, and let me say this, I wish the absolute best to every one of them, you know, no matter which direction they went or what's happening in their lives. It's not an issue anymore of who's right or who's wrong or any of those things. Just want to maintain the purity of the gospel, and that is that these folks are all righteous and holy and perfect in the eyes of God, and that the problems that ensued, let me guarantee you, were not problems between myself and God, nor anyone there and God.
Well, and ironically, or maybe not so ironically, the last 2 weeks we've ended the webcast last week with an extensive conversation about the whole concept of a church or an institution of learning. We talked to Vic Dobrennan last week about this. And there's a problem, Mike. You say you bat 1,000. When the gospel comes in to an organized institution, beautiful humans, it seems like that when the institution was formed around the concept of coming together on a weekly basis and entering into the so-called presence of God and have immunity, even as this one, the Freedom Worship Center in Houston, purportedly was designed to do, was to bring people into an understanding of the gospel. It seems like, Michael, because the concept of a church building, what we understand as a church, is so anti-biblical, if you will.
Yeah.
It's not in there. When they talk about the church at Corinth or the church in Thessalonica or wherever they happen to be in Jerusalem, they weren't talking about a building where people met. They were talking about the human beings that were living in that city.
Right. Yeah. Nobody can go to church.
Yeah. I mean, and so when
that is a modern-day concept. It's not biblical. There's nothing biblical about it at all. You can't go to church.
When you start with a concept that is ill-defined right from the get-go, you're in trouble. And when people look to a building as a church, I mean, that is just as wrong as it could be. It's like a mistranslation in the same way that when I discovered that the King James Bible had translated the word Pesach, the Hebrew word Pesach, with Passover, and had mistranslated it as Easter, it screws up the whole works.
Yeah.
And so even though we are very open to having an ongoing, obviously, that's, listen, we're having a seminar, a webinar, if you will, every week at this time. We've been doing it for over 3 years now. This is an organized, although not to date been well-funded, it's been a funded effort through a what's called the United States a 501c3, which is a designation for a non-for-profit corporation. We have an organized effort to get this message out. We're not against organization. We're not against an institution of gospel learning, if you will. But, Mikey, for some reason, it seems like the formal setting of a church with a pastor and with, you know, people with titles and people looking to certain people for direction for their lives and things like that in a formal setting, it seems like when the gospel comes in, those organizations cease to exist. It happened in Houston. You tried it one more time. It happened to our group here when you came many years ago now, over a decade ago now, right around 10 years ago. It was over 10 years ago, actually. That thing disintegrated. And it, like you said, you're batting 1,000. So maybe it's not where the gospel belongs. I don't know.
Well, the gospel belongs everywhere, but when you try to define anything about the gospel as being a specific place, that's where the wheels fall off the wagon, if you will. While the gospel belongs everywhere, you can't build a place for it to be, especially with the title of a church, and then say, well, we're going to church. And now, it can become down just to what people would say semantics or technicalities, if you will. But, you know, in this case and any other case that I've been in, it hasn't just been the organized effort. The root of it is legalism. And I can tell you that the reason that the church, the quote, church fell apart here, the church didn't fall apart. This organization fell apart. And the reason it fell apart was legalism. Legalism has a lot of faces, and believe me, it can be disguised in many, many ways. But the purity of the gospel will always, always, always come through. But you can't start fudging, you know. You can't start saying, yes, I believe all this, but you're supposed to tithe. You just can't. You can't take things and turn them back into, this would have been a perfect place where Paul would have taught in Hebrews about what happened here. And you just can't do that. And as Paul explains throughout Hebrews, which I'm so looking forward to teaching on, you can't take one of these old concepts without taking a big bite of legalism, and you're watering down the gospel. And now, whether people do that deliberately or without, you know, unwittingly, without knowing what they're doing, I can't figure that out. That's people's hearts. Only thing I know is when it's happening. And, I tried so hard to keep my mouth shut. Glenn, I wanted to just fit in somewhere. I understand, you know, the people who are asking us about a group and a place, and my gosh, I wanted that so badly that I bent and molded myself.
That you tried it again.
And I tried it again, as I've tried it again and again and again. If I get involved someplace, the gospel's going to be involved. I can't leave the gospel. And there were things, just like the tithe issue, And I cringed, and I tried to morph myself around, saying, well, he's teaching not tithing as a requirement, but a recommendation for a certain amount. Well, then don't call it tithe, for God's sake. Tithe is what Jesus fulfilled, you know. So, you know, let's just, you might as well, and this would be what Paul would say, you might as well just start animal sacrifices then. If that works, then get the goat out. And because the mentality is corruptive. It is corruptive to the heart and the mind. And to maintain the purity and the integrity of the gospel, as far as a teacher is concerned, is my goal. I, like I said, I did everything to morph myself into the situation, but in doing so, I was having to try to morph the gospel into the situation, and the gospel just blew the whole thing wide apart.
That's right, and that's what happened, beautiful humans. I mean, the gospel, without Michael, I mean, I went there and visited and got a chance to share myself and was very tuned into what was happening in Houston at that time. And when Michael says he tried to morph himself and allow himself to be in the situation, we're talking about people that talked about receiving answers to prayer for healing. We're talking about people who talked about the importance of water baptism and the taking of actual communion, physical communion. And while we're not against those things per se, if they're used as an example to teach and demonstrate, as the Old Testament did, about the work of the cross and about the redemption of humanity and about the salvation of the soul, all those things are wonderful. But this was done, Michael, basically in a religious context, and it gave me the willies. I mean, I just got to tell you that right now. And we tried it. I mean, we tried it one more time. And let me quote a great teacher and preacher of the gospel and reader of the Bible. It don't work!
And, you know, people might ask me, well, would you try it again? Sure, why not? Because, see, I don't have anything to lose. I mean, the hope that the gospel could have an organization other than the Gospel Revolution, Mike Williams Ministries, to have another organization by which it is exalted, promoted, and I will never ever not be willing to try, because you see, I don't have anything to lose. Because when I go into the situation, I'm not going to change my mind.
Well, you do have something to lose, though, Michael. You have energy to lose. You have time to lose. You have emotion to lose.
But
I had the energy.
I had the time. And if I didn't have the energy and I didn't have the time, I wouldn't do it. But the fact is, I did. So.
But I really believe, like, for example, we've talked about this many times on this program. When Passover rolls around, our family does a full-on Passover dinner, a Passover Seder. And we read the prayers from the Haggadah, which is the Jewish prayer book, and the telling of the story of the Hebrew children's exodus from Egypt. But we do it solely for the purpose of the teaching of the gospel and all the types and the foreshadowings that lends itself to. And plus, we do it as a family tradition. It's just a great time. I know that the vast majority of beautiful humans listening, and I know you personally, would love to have that experience. But in no way do we think that somehow, by participating in the Passover, that somehow we've got it over on some other people, whether they be believers in Christ or not, who are not doing the Passover or don't understand the Passover. It's just a fun, positive learning experience.
Well, see, the thing is...
I think it's possible to have an organized effort where people have a sense of community and a oneness with each other through Christ and just through a common effort and bond and relationships, to have the gospel presented in an organized and articulate and constructive way. I think it's possible, but we just haven't seen it yet.
Well, my aversion is not to tradition. It is not to structure. It is not to organization. These are all fine and wonderful things. My aversion is to legalism. And I am very grateful that I have come to the point where that I am to be able to recognize legalism. I don't even mind going to legalistic churches. I'd go to the First Church of Satan to share the gospel. I don't care what the title is over the door. I have nothing to lose. If they'll let me say what I've got to say, if everybody goes up in arms and calls out the KKK or whatever, I don't care what they do.
Right, but there's a difference between going and sharing in a venue, whether it be the First Church of Satan or the First Baptist Church or whatever, and then having an organized, ongoing institution. There's a major difference with that. It's about 10:15. Go ahead, Michael.
We've got an organized, ongoing institution, if you will, as far as the ministry is concerned.
Yeah, we do.
You know, and again, that is not the aversion. The aversion is to legalism.
Yes, we do oppose legalism, beautiful humans. We do it each and every day of our lives. We do it each and every week on this webcast. And speaking of our efforts and our institution to promote the gospel, we have a major contributor to that effort online with us from north of the border. Mr. James Gustafson is online with us. James!
Oh, awesome. How are you tonight?
Hey,
we're
James.
We're doing wonderfully. We're having fun.
Yes, I can hear that. I think we're done farming now, and I got in here in time to hear this one finally.
Awesome. Good to hear your voice, James.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to still planning to come to Houston on, what is that, next Thursday?
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
You better park that tractor.
Yeah, we parked them tonight.
Literally, you're done farming now? As of this evening?
Yep.
What did the harvest entail?
Well, I had a fellow work for me for 25 years when I was in the John Deere business. And now I'm working for him, and he farms 22,000 acres. And so,
of what?
Well, we had durum wheat, canola, and peas this year.
Wow.
And right now we're just doing our fall work because he's a pretty good manager, and we had our harvest off about 3 weeks ago, or four, I guess it was. So now we're doing all our fall work and ready for, and it's November, so normally we don't get this time. Like, there's a lot of crop that hasn't been harvested here yet. But they're going now, but that's very, very unusual.
Well, you sound like you've had a full season of harvesting and are ready for a refreshing time in Houston.
I am. These last couple of, I picked up parts of the live webcast, and then I had to go back and listen to them on the archives because, I wanted to kind of follow along on what was being said. But, there's something that I think you guys have pretty much hit it on the head tonight. It's legalism. But last week after, I think it was Vic that called in, and I heard that conversation, and Vic was going to call me here last night, and we were going to talk about it. But, you know, I share a totally different experience. And you know how when Mike knows this better than anyone else about me, that when I was in the church structure, I wanted to be the very best I could be in everything that I did, you know. And if they said, do this, I did it, you know. And it was such a letdown at the end. And what actually happened when the church that we were involved in started to fall apart, and it did fall apart, it was actually it was my wife, and as of yet, she's still planning to come with me to Houston. But, you know, she said, let's sit down and analyze this thing. And I give all credit to her because, you know, we sat down there, we went to church, we prayed for the same people, we went out to lunch with the same people, we, you know, and we were just shrinking all the time.
Wow.
So when we left, we set a new goal, and that was to meet 20 new people every year.
Wow.
And in order to do that, we went to the Ball Diamonds, to the hockey rinks, and to the racetrack, and that has totally transformed our lives. Because, but I will say this, that I believe religion has a lot larger grip on people than what they're willing to admit.
And you think?
I know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I'll just give you an example. We had our wind-up banquet for the racetrack the other night. We had 250 people there. And the guy that was supposed to, that the organizers had set out to say the grace before we had the dinner, he couldn't make it. So they were running around there asking who would say grace, you know, and I said, well, you know, I don't even, is it necessary that we have somebody say grace? Well, I'll tell you what, did I get it?
Well, because you wanted to really share grace. You didn't want to just pray a prayer before dinner.
No. And you know, so even though we have moved outside of the realm of the people who we thought, you know, were it, people are very, very, you know, deep down in their hearts, well, they call it religion, but, and in most cases it is. I don't even know if I'm making a whole lot of sense here, but
oh yeah, you're making all kinds of sense. So who gave the grace?
Well, the MC, you know. Finally, he come up with something there, and you know he was all over the. But I mean, if I would have got it, I'm the president of the organization. That's why I'm saying that I would have got it if I would have if I wouldn't have gone with grace that night. And it wasn't the word of faith people, it was the traditional religious people who expected that to happen. And I was so surprised.
Well, you could share a good grace, Michael, couldn't you, before a meal?
Well, of course. But
what would be a good grace that you could give in a situation like that, Michael? What would you say?
You can say all the thank yous for everything. You can start with the kids and thank you for food. Thank you for, you know, thank you is just about the only thing I know to do anymore. But
And that's basically what the guy did. You know, he thanked us for the guys that were over in Vietnam and protecting our country and, you know, and I didn't think we were ever going to get through it, but anyway, we did.
China, people in China.
You can thank God that all people have been made righteous, regardless of their faith.
Well, now, wouldn't that have been interesting at the racetrack?
Or their lack of faith. That they're all. Thank you, God, that you've made all people righteous in your sight.
Thank you, Jesus, for setting us free from our
own faith. All people that are gathered here tonight are one with you and one with each other.
And you know what? That that with all the people that we hang out with, and very few of them are church people, as far we didn't think so, but we're finding out that they go to the Presbyterian and the Church of Christ and we got a slug of them here, and we didn't think they were really that committed to these, and it's we're finding out that they are Catholic, Baptists, and you know, all this kind of stuff, Church of God here, and of course that we don't. There's not too many of them from the Church of God there, because they got their own curriculum and the whole, you know, they're so busy they can't come to the racetrack. But
what are you racing there?
Well, we stock cars on a dirt track.
It's a stock car race, very
nice facility. 3/8 mile, circular.
Well, I'm down with all that, but the hockey thing, man, I don't know if God's into hockey.
Yeah. Well, we have two hockey players staying.
No, I know there. God's into hockey.
So anyway, but I, you know, that's the way I feel, and I was going to write a whole long letter of what has transpired in our lives, because, you know, for me, too, if I want to get mixed up, all I have to do is go back to one of these churches that really think they're it, you know, or I don't even know what they call themselves now, or would they be called word churches now? And after I come out of those, and, you know, periodically we go back to, my wife and I go back to the old community church where we were born and raised, and boy, we get it from every side, because, you know, we're living differently than we were before, and we're very happy with the way we're doing.
Yeah.
But a lot of people aren't happy with what we're doing.
It's nice to be the happy people, whether other people are happy about it or not. Eh?
I hear you.
Oh, well, you know what Abraham Lincoln said.
Well, James, I'm sure looking forward to seeing you and Gail, and I am so excited. I don't know if you heard earlier, I've been reading the Book of Hebrews backward. So,
I'm looking forward to it as well. Actually, I want to print the Book of Hebrews out on paper. Double spaced line. I think I can do it so that I can put some notes and stuff in there. But
well, what a good idea.
Well, I found it finally on the internet, and I think my wife's kind of sitting at the computer right now to see if she can get it to work, and I hope it works.
Well, you know what we could do? If you bring that with you, let's try to get that run off for the folks that are attending the day sessions, and that'll give them a nice place to take some notes too.
Well, we're working on it. It's you like the King James Version, right?
Yes. You know, we've got to use the one Jesus read.
Yeah, I know. Well,
Mike's just kidding, folks. That's a joke.
I hear you. But that's what we're doing right now, actually, is we're trying to get it to print.
Well, that's awesome. Bring yours, and then if we'll take it into the office there, and the Marriott will run us off copies for everyone in attendance, and that'll give them some nice space to take notes also.
Yeah,
they will
appreciate
that
greatly.
The
thing we can't get it to do is we can't format it to double space right now. And it's
I hear you. I bet if Gail's got a hold of it, it'll get done.
She's trying.
If not, she knows somebody
who
does.
I don't think it's going to allow us to do it, but we'll try.
All right.
You know, if you copy it onto Word, James, and then you can just go back in there and I think it'll, you know, you can edit it yourself.
Maybe.
Copy it onto a Word document.
Okay.
But give me a call if you're having trouble. We'll get it figured out.
Okay.
1 week from tomorrow, my friend.
I know. I got two funerals to go to in the meantime.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my.
my cousin on Friday, and then this I had a truck driver for 15 years, and his 20-year-old daughter was killed in a car accident.
Oh, no.
That is so tragic. That's tomorrow. I don't know. I just don't have enough makeup to go to something like that. The guy's just devastated, and I...
That's a sad one.
I have never felt so much sorrow in all my life as I have for him and this situation, and I know I'm going to be emotional, and that's not cool. And then the next one's my cousin. He's 1 year older than me.
Yeah.
And
when is that one?
Friday.
Well,
got to get over that.
Maybe you'll have a chance to share with the close family members about your perspective. On where they are right now.
I hear you.
That just sucks. I mean, it's just one of the things about this life is the separation that occurs at death for loved ones and family members.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, and thank God with the gospel we don't have to worry about where they are. And I know a lot of people go through that. So.
I hear you.
Yep.
That's what Paul said. We don't despair. We have that hope.
Yep.
And saw a woman on the Ellen DeGeneres show yesterday who had lost her husband and two daughters, or a son and a daughter, I forget, but very young children, all together in a car accident. And how she's gone on to live her life she said on the Ellen DeGeneres show yesterday that she lives with the hope of seeing them all again one day.
Yeah.
And it was very reaffirming and very positive. Very tragic, of course. But somehow we get through. Michael's talked many times in the past, this Michael, about how we have been built to sustain suffering, and there's something about the
condition to recover from.
And I think it has something to do with what you were referencing earlier about the gospel being in our heart from our birth.
Yeah,
and that what religion does, of course, is program us out of that understanding of our oneness and ultimate destination.
Yep.
And there's something about understanding that. That helps people get through their suffering.
Hmm. Very true.
Well, when Michael says very true and has nothing else to say, it's time to wrap it up.
I hear you.
Okay. James, we'll see you next week. Hey, listen, and are you coming in on Thursday?
I believe that's when our flights are, yeah.
Okay, well, next week on the webcast, I'll be in Houston. And we're going to be webcasting live from the convention site, so that should be kind of fun.
Yeah, you did
that
last year.
And then we'll all be gathered on Thursday night. And, folks, if you have any possibility at all of attending, just call Michael directly at home at 281-955-1910. That's 281-955-1910. And if you need any help at all or have any questions, there's still time. There's still availability at the Marriott in Houston. We'd love to see you. We cannot tell you what a wonderful experience it is to gather with folks over an extended weekend and just experience not only the teaching, but just the oneness and the fellowship that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's fantastic, and it's hard to believe that it's been a year already, but we're getting together again in 1 week's time, and we'll have a full report from Houston next week, and then, of course, in 2 weeks' time, a report about the convention for you. So, James, thank you. We love you.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
All right,
thanks.
Buddy. Okay,
nice.
Here's James Gustafson from Canada coming down to Houston, going through it. Tough few days. That's tough stuff, Michael.
Yeah, it sure is.
But
our
heart served, and we are with him and Gail.
Absolutely.
And if there's anything we can do for you ever, feel free to email us as well at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. All right, Mike, you ready for me next week?
I'm ready for you, Glenn. Can't wait to see you.
All right. Well, we're going to do that if everything works out well in a week's time from Houston, and then the convention as the gospel revolution rolls on. So until next week in Houston, I want to thank Sean O'Halloran for engineering and producing. I want to thank Germa Colson for calling in all the emails, and I want to thank Mark Gunger for giving us a great example of bizarre legalism that allowed us for a wonderful discussion tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!